Chapter 14. The Queen, I grunted.
Well, it's kind of hard to say since I couldn't hear the other person,
Valerie stated.
But Kalara kept saying, my love, your highness, and my unearthly moon goddess. So it was pretty easy to guess she's speaking to the Queen.
But why the summoning circle?
Josephine whispered.
Do you think that Kalara is trying to bring the Queen here? Can she even do that? Is it possible?
No. Summoning circles are only used to evoke spirits of the undead. There's no way that a mortal could pass through the gates of the unknown and return into the mortal world without dying.
How do you know so much about this?
Valerie murmured. As I said before, alchemy and black magic aren't the same thing, but their processes are similar. You learn a lot of things while traveling and selling wares. You meet a lot of questionable people who say they're selling charms and runes, when in reality they're procured through darker means.
I also think that Kalara's power isn't a combative one,
the feline woman explained.
I couldn't hear the Queen, of course, but Kalara kept confirming things to her as if the Queen is worried. She said things like, I know my power isn't strong, my love, and as soon as I see any sign of trouble, I'll return to you.
Was the summoning circle activated? I asked, and from the way Valerie's lips twisted, I knew she didn't understand what I meant.
Huh? Activated?
Sorry, I shook my head. Was there any light coming out of the sigils painted across the ground? Usually the light will flow through the cracks of the lines.
No. She had a few lamps, but nothing like that. Also, she told the Queen it took her hours to get to the crying tree. She said she came here as soon as she left Edenee's Manor. But it shouldn't have taken her all day. It only took us a few minutes, didn't it? What does that mean?
I glanced over at Daisy, Josephine, and Ryan, and their faces told me everything I needed to know.
We think it's something to do with the spirits that reside here,
Daisy explained.
I told Charles earlier that we should have been walking for much longer than we were, but we got here in less than 15 minutes. That's not normal or natural, and now you're saying that it took Kalara hours?
The spirits knew that our intentions were pure,
Ryan barked,
and they sensed that Kalara's weren't. They tried everything they could to keep her out, but she persisted until she found it.
Then we have no other choice. We have to go in there and attack. Not only for us, but for the spirits who live there. They are on our side, and all they want is to be left in peace.
So what's the plan?
Ryan asked.
We bust in, knock her out, and drag her back to the horses.
No, we have to be more organized than that. You can throw a few fireballs, but we can't kill her or injure her. If she's speaking to the Queen right now, she'll tell her what's happening, and then we'll have the whole capital after us. I say we sneak up on her and confront her directly. Josephine, maybe control her body so she can't run away.
Oh!
Valerie giggled, raising a hand into the air, and jumped from foot to foot.
I've been working on something pretty special. Do you think I can use it? I'll go in first, confuse the hell out of her, and then all of you can move in.
What have you been practicing? I want to make sure that there's no possible way that this can backfire.
Well, I haven't come up with an official name for it yet. But let's call it mirroring. Remember when I turned all of you invisible back in Hortensia's dorm? It's kinda like that, but the exact opposite. I can duplicate my body multiple times, like a bunch of mirrors. The most copies I've created of myself at one time was 10? But after a while, it's exhausting, and I can only do 3 or 4. If I did that, maybe raced around the outer perimeter of the crying tree, Kalara would have to get up and investigate. Then all of you jump out and knock her around a bit.
That sounds perfect. Lead us to where she is, and then the rest of us will hang back.
Sure.
The feline woman nodded, turned, and silently stepped through the brush.
It's this way.
We followed after her and tried not to make too much noise, but I wasn't entirely sure how the feline woman stayed utterly silent the entire time. Her ears laid flat against her head, and one of them occasionally lifted, twitched, and then dropped. The strange sensation washed over me again, and I felt the tug in the middle of my chest. But this time, it felt more desperate. I saw the blue flickering lights in the corners of my eyes again, and I wondered if this was the work of the spirits shortening our trek toward the crying tree. We had to move slowly, but the same eerie aura hung around our shoulders as if we were passing through time and space. I couldn't explain it or understand it, but silently thanked the lovers' spirits for allowing us to pass through the forest safely. The two specters knew why we were here, and I fully believed that they understood we fought for the same reasons they had.
"She's over here!"
Valerie mouthed, lowered herself closer to the ground, and crept forward.
"Just beyond those trees!"
I kept my eyes glued to the ground to make sure I made no noise until I stood beside the feline woman. I bent my knees and lowered myself closer to the ash blonde. The stunning cat girl reached forward, grabbed a branch, and lowered it so I could see into the small clearing beyond. I saw the faded trees, the mighty oak, and the smaller linden knotted together, and Kalara knelt in front of them. The turban-wearing woman whispered soft words to herself, all the while mixing a small potion in a wooden bowl. She held the bowl with both hands, and then poured the scarlet mixture over the summoning circle in front of her. It was some sort of ritual that I didn't recognize or understand, but Kalara clearly spoke to someone we couldn't see. I was almost sure that her power was some sort of telepathy, and we couldn't stop her from speaking directly to the queen, but we could force her to shut her mouth. I glanced over my shoulder toward Josephine, and the heiress seemed to understand what I meant. The honey blonde stalked forward, knelt between Valerie and me, and then concentrated on Kalara's face. The tattooed woman's voice slowed for a second, and then her lips closed with a resounding snap. Kalara's hands flew through the air, landed on her face, and attempted to pry her mouth open, but nothing happened. Low groans and grunts muffled through her tight lips, but no audible words slipped out. With Kalara's connection to the queen severed, I nodded toward Valerie, and the feline woman immediately faded out of view.
"Hide behind the trees,"
the cat girl whispered.
"I'm going to draw her out of the clearing."
I nodded, positioned myself behind the nearest largest tree, and then signaled for the others to do the same. Josephine kept her eyes glued to Kalara and stepped behind a tree to the right, all the while maintaining the same level of concentration. If the heiress wavered for a second, the connection would be broken, and Kalara would scream to the queen for help. I watched for Valerie, but the feline woman didn't appear for a long time, and Kalara sat on the ground, clutching her throat and tearing at her lips. Then I felt it. The dried ferns to my left shifted, and a humanoid shape skipped past with a light giggle. Kalara's hands dropped from her throat and slammed down onto the ground in front of her. The tattooed woman observed the forest, spotted Valerie's blurred shape, but right as she caught it, another Valerie appeared and skipped in the opposite direction.
"Akurla!"
Valerie whispered.
"Akurla!"
The turban-wearing woman's eyes widened, and a muffled shriek escaped her lips. But she couldn't fight against the hold Josephine had over her. The tattooed woman shakily stood and whipped around as she tried to search out the feline woman for a second time.
"I know your name!"
the ash blonde whooped.
"I know who you are! Akurla Audabane, consort to the queen!"
Three more Valeries appeared on the outskirts of the tree line, and Kalara stumbled toward them with rage in her scarlet eyes. The turban-wearing woman reached one of the copies and swung an arm toward it, but her hand passed right through it. The catgirl's delighted laughter vibrated through the forest, and all of her copies hopped backward, skipped through the ferns, and led the spy out of the clearing. I pressed myself against the back of the tree and held my breath as Kalara followed after Valerie's copies. The tattooed woman didn't even notice me or any of my other women. She followed all of the versions of the feline woman as they skipped through the tall, yellowing grass. Kalara mumbled something through her lips, but it was so jumbled that no one could make out what she was saying. Valerie turned back with a loud cackle of laughter, leaned in close, and asked in unison with her clones.
"Sorry, I can't understand you. Can you repeat that?"
I took a step forward, away from the tree, right as Kalara reached around her back. The tattooed woman fumbled with the strange knotted ropes that clothed her and produced a small silver dagger. We already guessed that the spy's abilities were useful in a fight, and it didn't surprise me that she'd brought a weapon just in case. Valerie didn't know that Kalara had a weapon, though I couldn't totally be sure the feline woman in front of the spy was the real Valerie. Kalara would either slash through the copy of the catgirl like before, or she'd injure my monster woman. But I wasn't going to allow that to happen either way. Valerie's blue eyes landed on me over Kalara's shoulder, and I felt an unfamiliar sensation washed over me. I felt as if my cells divided, and I was being pulled into two different directions. I blinked my eyes out of reflex, and when I peeked out of the corners of my eyes, two people stood beside me. Then I realized they were two copies of me. I had no time to stand there and marvel at what happened. I had to act. I stepped forward and made sure that my boots made a lot of noise. Kalara tentatively turned but kept her body facing both of us in case either of us attacked.
"Morrow's Mayburn,"
Kalara mumbled through her closed lips. I knew exactly what she said that time, since it was a garbled version of my name. Kalara jabbed forward with the knife, but couldn't figure out which version of me to attack. Her eyes swiveled between me and the clone of me to the right for a second. The tattooed woman lunged forward, but before I could step back, a wall of flame separated the two of us. For a second, the heat beat at my face, and I thought to myself that the flames were incredibly loud, but then I realized it was the sound of Kalara screaming in pain. The fire disappeared immediately, and when Kalara came into view, she hunched over and held the burned arm to her chest. The dagger in her hands clattered to the forest floor, and Ryan faced forward, kicked it out of the way, and held up both of her tensed hands in front of her. Josephine and Daisy stepped out of the shadows and fell into formation to create a tight circle around the tattooed woman. Kilara's eyes fell on Josephine, and finally the turban-wearing woman understood why she was unable to speak. With her injured arm held tightly to her chest, Kalara took a staggering step toward the arras, but Josephine didn't waver. Instead, the honey blonde paced forward, her features hardened, and she lifted her right hand into the air.
"Not a step closer, Kalara,"
Josephine barked.
"You know what my power is, don't you? I'm in control of your body, every muscle and every organ. They obey my command, not yours."
Josephine's orange cat-like eyes burned with a heat I'd never seen before, and the honey blonde gritted her teeth as she went on.
"Did you know that your throat is almost entirely comprised of muscles? There are about 50 different ones spanning from the back of your neck to the front. Did you know that your larynx is only about 4 to 5 centimeters wide as it is long? Such a small space for the number of muscles surrounding it. Now, imagine if all those muscles contracted at once. How small do you think the larynx would become? Let me ask you another question, Kalara. If I flexed all of the muscles in your neck, do you think you could breathe? Do you want to find out? Come closer. Let's find out."
I'd never seen Josephine like this before, and I wondered for half a second if this was the same person who'd been afraid back in the manor. The heiress was utterly fearless, and it finally seemed that all of the pent-up anger at the other aristocrats finally started to pour out. Kalara took a step away from the heiress, but another wall of fire blazed directly behind her, and the tattooed woman jumped away.
"You came into this thinking that Charles was an ordinary brute, a brute that you could snuff out of existence with little to no uproar. Is that anything like you imagined, Kalara? You think the Queen protects you, don't you? Then where is she? She sent you out here with no protection and still expected you to face Charles head-on. Did you think we wouldn't put up a fight? Where is your Queen, Kalara? She's certainly not here. I'll tell you, since you can't exactly answer me right now. Your Queen is hiding away in her castle. She doesn't care about you. If she had, she would have sent someone along with you for protection. Do you think she loves you? You wouldn't do that to someone you love."
"Give up now,"
Daisy boomed.
"We have you surrounded, and there's no escape. You can't even call out to your precious queen in your time of need. Oh, how sad is that?"
"Don't worry, Kalara," I chuckled, stepped forward with my clones, and spread my arms wide. "Everything is all right. Everything will be fine. Once we're finished, you won't remember that this happened, and you'll get to live a life full of bliss and happiness." Killara whipped around and faced me, but it didn't seem like the spy would back down any time soon. Daisy stared at me over the turban-wearing woman's shoulders, silently stepped closer, and knit her fingers over Killara's head. I prayed that the bear girl wouldn't put too much force behind the strike. I'd seen the damage those two hands could bring, and our objective here wasn't to kill the tattooed woman. Daisy brought her hands down in a slow swing, and Killara felt the change in the air, but didn't have time to move out of the way. The brunette's hands slowed inches away from the crown of Killara's head, and a loud crack exploded through the forest. The forced air hit the turban-wearing woman, and instantly her eyes rolled back in her head. The spy fell to the side in a pile of limbs, and all of us standing in the circle took a collective sigh.
Well, that was surprisingly easier than I thought,
Valerie murmured.
I thought she was going to try and kill us all, but I had no idea she would go down that easily. Daisy, what kind of move is that? The only hit her with air? What happened?
Changed the pressure around her head,
Daisy chuckled.
Kind of like an altitude change? It was so fast that she couldn't breathe, and no oxygen reached her brain, so she passed out.
How long do you think it'll last? I asked. Long enough to get her back to the manor?
No idea,
Daisy replied. Well, if it doesn't, Daisy could always do it again. Now, let's get her out of here before she does wake up. I stepped forward, rolled Killara over onto her side, and threw her over my shoulder after we searched her for weapons. The spy was dead weight and didn't move at all as I trudged forward through the forest. All of my women followed after me in the darkness, and again, I felt as if the ground beneath our feet shrunk and folded in on itself. When we arrived, we'd only spent 15 minutes walking, and I wondered how long it would take us to get back out. I didn't have to ponder for long, because within a few minutes of walking, I spied the tree line right where we'd entered. I swiveled my eyes back toward the forest and spied the ghostly silhouette who'd guided us to Killara, but this time there was another shape with her, a man's. The two spirits stood between two trees and stayed absolutely still for a moment, but as I stepped out onto the gravel of the road, both of them bowed their heads. Suddenly, the forest floor seemed to reel and then rolled backward, and the two shapes were lost between tree trunks that hadn't been there a second ago. Thank you, I murmured to the two spirits. Thank you for helping us. I breathed a heavy sigh and then crossed toward the wagon across the road. My women raced toward it, and Ryan, Valerie, and Josephine hopped into the back while Daisy climbed up into the front seat. I lowered the hatch of the cart, laid Killara's unconscious body down, and then slid her in with a soft shuffle. I hurried to the front and climbed in beside the bear girl before grabbing the reins in my hands. I smacked them gently across the horses' backs and guided them around in the direction of home. We'll take the back roads home again. I don't want to get caught by Edeny or her guards. It'll be longer than going straight through, but if she wakes up... Daisy, do your thing.
Yes, Charles.
The brunette nodded and turned to stare down at the body in the back.
I can't believe those ghosts helped us,
Valerie breathed.
I thought that all spirits were evil and out to hurt people.
Well, not all of them, I guess. I fully believe that those two would have tried to hurt us if we were any other people. They somehow knew what we stand for, and they allowed us to pass. You heard what Valerie said. It took hours for Killara to finally reach the crying tree, and I'm sure she battled their attacks the entire way there.
They knew what we stand for,
Ryan nodded.
They understood that we were fighting exactly what they died for, the freedom to love each other without persecution. They understood us better than anyone in this city. I'm glad they allowed us to pass. And I wish there were something we could do for them.
They're together now, I soothed, for all eternity. That's the one good thing that came out of both of them dying. They were separated for so long. I don't think they mind being tied to the earth like this, as long as they're allowed to be together.
I honestly believe that we wouldn't have made it through without their help,
Josephine smiled.
I wish we'd gotten to stay longer and look at the crying tree. It was so beautiful, and people rarely find it out here without being attacked.
We reached the end of a big bend, and I pulled off onto the side road we'd taken on our way here. The street lamps in between buildings burned a little brighter this time, and I could make out more aristocrats moving to and from different taverns while they drank their fill when I suddenly saw it. Four lines of soldiers marching in time down the middle of the street, and in front of them, Edeny rode on the back of a white stallion. The Duchess held her cane in the crook of her arm and lifted it into the air to scream something to her guards. The men broke formation, bolted forward, and raced inside different buildings. I assumed they were performing raids in case Kalara shacked up with any of the aristocrats who lived or owned businesses in town. They wouldn't find her there. She laid unconscious in the back of my wagon at this very moment. Edeny kicked her horse's sides with her heels, and the beast took over down the brick-paved road. I wondered where she was headed and if she had a specific location in mind, but it didn't matter anyway. By the end of the night, Kalara, or Akurla Outabane, would cease to exist, and a brand new monster girl would be born. I sighed softly under my breath and hoped that once the new monster girl came into existence, all of our problems would disappear. Or would, for at least a little bit. I was so tired, and I felt as if I hadn't slept in ages. But I had no other choice than to keep going.
"Did you see Edeny?"
Valerie murmured.
"Through the buildings?"
"Yes,"
Ryan grunted.
"On the white horse. Who does she think she is? Some sort of knightess in shining armor? It's not like she's out to save Edenhard anyway."
"What Charles said earlier made me think,"
the feline woman mused.
"Having Edeny on our side isn't all bad. She promised to train us and hone our skills, and that's nice. I mean, she can be a little overbearing and downright annoying, but she has a lot of skills that we can use in the future. Not only that, and I hate to admit this, but she's gorgeous. That's what I was going to say when I saw her on the horse. She looks like a fairy tale."
"Yes, she is pretty, but she's conniving, cunning, sly, and malicious. All of her bad traits outweigh the good ones, and until she's one of us, we can't let our guard slip for even a second. Edeny is too smart for her own good. That's why I'm so cautious and apologetic with everything we do."
"It kind of makes me mad how stunning she is,"
Daisy laughed.
"Every time I think of villainous people, I think of those from stories. Hunched over crones with hooked noses and all black robes."
"With warts,"
Valerie giggled.
"And big bellies."
"Sounds more like Delphine than Edeny. Now, that woman was a villain out of a storybook. She was grotesque."
"Yes, she was,"
the feline woman nodded.
"I felt so sorry that you had to go into her house and attempt to seduce her. She was so ugly. Her poor consorts had to have sex with her. Ugh! Gross!"
"Hortensia was pretty,"
Daisy offered.
"In a way. A dominating way. She looked like she knew how to kill you in 30 different ways and would do them without hesitation."
"She probably could. I'm so surprised that we managed to pull that one off. Maybe that's where Ryan gets her fiery personality."
"Maybe,"
the imp woman shrugged.
"Or it was from my past life as an imp. Who knows?"
"The only person we never got to know was the prisoner we used for you, Valerie. But we know that she was a harlot. But she did shout some pretty disgusting things right before I threw the switch."
"People say a lot of things when they're afraid,"
Daisy nodded.
"Hortensia promised not to tell anyone, but she once worked for the Queen. Hell, she might have been a spy just like Kalara for all we know."
"No, I believe that Hortensia was nothing more than a soldier that served in her army, lost her eye from a tragic accident, and then was given a job here out of pity from the Queen."
"Wait,"
the brunette murmured.
"Did Hortensia say when she lost her eye it was a rogue brute, but like an augmented brute?"
"I believe so. Why?"
"Does that mean there could be others out there like us? It couldn't have been Edeny or your super soldiers. Someone had to create them and attack the Queen."
"You know, I thought about that, but I never came up with a solution. It couldn't have been Edeny since we were working together at that time, but it easily could have been someone else. Though I bet it was nothing more than an assassination attempt and not a group of people who believe the same thing as us."
"Well,"
Josephine interjected,
"that might not be true."
"What do you mean?"
"You already know that I'm part of a secret society of harlots, but a lot of them are accomplished women. Some of them are doctors and renowned scientists. It could have easily been one of my ranks, and I would have never known. A lot of the missions that they go on are so secret and only known as code names. I could ask around, send out a few letters to some of my comrades.
Yes, do that and see if it was one of them. I'd really like to know if someone had the same idea as Edeny, but for other reasons.
Hey!
Valerie cried.
We're almost home!
I lifted my head and gazed up the hill toward the manor. All the candles we'd left in the window still burned, and from this distance away, I could make out the silhouettes of the soldiers' tents. We'd given them large doses to keep them asleep until morning, and I highly doubted that any of them had woken up yet. Once we reached the top of the hill, we maneuvered through the path we'd created earlier and made it back to the carriage house. Ryan and I worked together to unhitch the horses and got them back into their respective stalls. When we finished, I moved toward the back of the wagon to grab Kalara, but she wasn't there. Oh, science. Oh, science. Panic immediately beat in my brain, and my heart pounded in my chest as I glanced toward Ryan. The black-haired beauty tilted her head and hurried over, but stopped in her tracks as she noticed the empty wagon bed.
Where? She couldn't have escaped. We were right here.
What?
Valerie appeared from the stairs and tilted her head.
What's happening?
Kalara, she's missing.
What? No, she's not. Daisy carried her downstairs while you and Ryan put the horses away. We're all super excited about the experiment, so we took her down without telling you. Daisy put her into Compartment B, and Josephine is keeping an eye on her in case she wakes up.
Oh, thanks, science. I didn't want to spend the rest of the night chasing after her again.
Nope. She's tucked away in the machine. I just came up to check if you were coming down.
Yeah, we're coming. The three of us moved down the stairs and entered the lit laboratory. Daisy spoke to A.B. while Josephine stood at the door to Compartment B and stared through the glass window. All we needed to do now was load the Nyx into Compartment A, add my blood to the third compartment, and throw the switch. I moved toward the tank where we held the tiny creature, grabbed the glass we'd used earlier in the day, and rolled my right sleeve. I dipped my hand into the cold water and caught the Nyx within the glass. Before the tiny beast could escape, I pulled the cup out of the water and held it aloft. The Nyx raced through the water and beat at the glass for any means of escape. A soft song reached my ears, but it was so soft that it was barely audible. I opened the door to Compartment A, placed the glass containing the Nyx on the corrugated floor, and then closed it with a soft click. I glanced over at Josephine, but the heiress kept her eyes glued inside of the small room. I opened the doors to Compartment C and glared down at the space for a second. I brought my right hand to my face and then paused before I bit down on the webbing between my pointer finger and thumb. Blood flowed into my mouth, and I spit it out onto the floor before I held my hand into the third compartment. Large scarlet droplets fell from the cut and landed on the copper paneling in small pools. 1, 2, 3, I counted down. All right, that's enough. Josephine, is Kalara still unconscious?
Yes, she doesn't seem close to waking up.
Let us proceed. I grinned, crossed the room, and stood next to the paneling. Over here, everyone. Daisy, Valerie, Ryan, and Josephine came to stand beside me, and I reached above my head toward the switch. I breathed in deeply and then turned to the four women beside me. Ready? I asked.
Ready!
Valerie sang.
Ready.
Ryan nodded.
Yes, Charles.
Daisy grinned.
Oh, I'm so excited!
Josephine giggled.
Go on, Charles! We're waiting!
I swung the giant lever down into its cradle, and electricity crackled to life. All of the bulbs above our heads flickered on with a low hum. The sound rose in our ears as blinding white light poured out of all three of the compartments, and all of us squinted against it. I physically felt the electricity pass from the panel of lights and switches, passed through the thick, snaking wires across the floor, and finally reached my machine.
Oh, my heavens!
Josephine gasped.
It's so beautiful! I've never seen anything like it! See?
Valerie giggled.
Isn't it everything we said and more? This is is why we get so excited about our new sisters.
The pistons at the top of the machine moved so quickly that they were blurs through the air, and grayish smoke billowed out of the valves. The noise coming from my machine heightened to a single pitch and almost sounded like an opera singer's warbling voice. If I'd been a weaker man, the transformation process would have brought me to tears because of how beautiful it was. The blinding white light intensified to such a pinnacle that I squinted against it in pain and then bent down closer to the ground. "Close your eyes!" I shouted above the noise. "If you look now, it'll burn your retinas and you'll never be able to see again!" Loud clangs and the whirring of the slowing pistons reached my ears as I slowly reopened my eyes. Like all the other times before, the entire laboratory was filled with choking smoke, and I hurried to open one of the windows above our heads.
Is it finished?
Josephine coughed.
Oh, my. Oh, it's so smoky in here.
Yes. Yes. It's finished.
Now we hang back while Charles goes to check the last compartment,
the feline woman explained.
It's essential, because the new monster girl has to imprint on him, or something like that.
I crept toward the third compartment with light feet, stared into the foggy window for any sign of life, and then reached out for the door handle. My hand gripped onto the metal handle, swiveled down, swung the door open, and then I stared inside as the smoke billowed out. A soft sound came from inside, almost like singing, but in a language that I couldn't understand. I wafted the smoke away from my face, focused my eyes, and then grunted at the beautiful sight in front of me.